Then Christian addressed himself thus to his fellow, "Well, come, my good hopeful, I perceive that thou and I must walk by ourselves again." So I saw in my dream that they went on a pace before, and ignorance he came hobbling after. Then said Christian to his companion, "It pities me much for this poor man. It will certainly go ill with him at last. Alas, there are abundance in our town in his condition, whose families, yea, whole streets, and that of pilgrims too, and if there be so many in our parts, how many, think you, must there be in the place where he was born? Indeed, the word saith, he hath blinded their eyes, lest they should see, etc. But now we are by ourselves. What do you think of such men? Have they at no time, think you, convictions of sin, so consequently fears that their state is dangerous? Nay, do you answer that question yourself, for you are the elder man. Then I say, sometimes, as I think, they may, but they, being naturally ignorant, understand not that such convictions tend to their good, and therefore they do desperately seek to stifle them, and presumptuously continue to flatter themselves in the way of their own hearts. I do believe, as you say, that fear tends much to men's good, and to make them right at their beginning to go on pilgrimage. Without all doubt it doth, if it be right, for so says the word. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. How will you describe right fear? True or right fear is discovered by three things. By its rise, it is caused by saving convictions for sin. It driveth the soul to lay fast hold of Christ for salvation. It begetteth and continueth in the soul a great reverence of God, his word and ways, keeping it tender and making it afraid to turn from them to the right hand or to the left, to anything that may dishonour God, break its peace, grieve the spirit, or cause the enemy to speak reproachfully. Well said. I believe you have said the truth. Are we now almost got past the enchanted ground? Why, art thou weary of this discourse? No, verily, but that I would know where we are. We have not now above 2 miles further to go thereon, but let us return to our matter. Now the ignorant know not that such convictions that tend to put them in fear are for their good, and therefore they seek to stifle them. How do they seek to stifle them? They think that those fears are wrought by the devil, though indeed they are wrought of God, and thinking so, they resist them, as things that directly tend to their overthrow. Secondly, they also think that these fears tend to the spoiling of their faith, when, alas, for them, poor men that they have none at all, and therefore they harden their hearts against them. Thirdly, they presume they ought not to fear, and therefore in despite of them wax presumptuously confident. And fourthly, they see that those fears tend to take away from them their pitiful old self-holiness, and therefore they resist them with all their might. I know something of this myself. Before I knew myself, it was so with me. Well, we will leave at this time our neighbour ignorance by himself, and fall upon another profitable question. With all my heart, but you shall still begin. Well then, did you not know about 10 years ago one temporary in your parts, who was a forward man in religion then? Know him? Yes, he dwelt in Graceless, a town about 2 miles off of Honesty, and he dwelt next door to one Turnback. Right, he dwelt under the same roof with him. Well, that man was much awakened once. I believe that then he had some sight of his sins, and of the wages that were due thereto. I am of your mind, for, my house not being above 3 miles from him, he would oft times come to me, and that with many tears. Truly I pitied the man, and was not altogether without hope of him. But one may see, it is not every one that cries, Lord, Lord. He told me once that he was resolved to go on pilgrimage, as we do now, but all of a sudden he grew acquainted with one save self, and then he became a stranger to me. Now, since we are talking about him, Let us little inquire into the reason of the sudden backsliding of him and such others. It may be very profitable, but do you begin? Well then, there are, in my judgment, four reasons for it. Firstly, though the consciences of such men are awakened, yet their minds are not changed. Therefore, when the power of guilt weareth away, that which provoked them to be religious ceaseth. Wherefore they naturally turn to their own course again, even as we see the dog that is sick of what he hath eaten, so long as his sickness prevails, he vomits and casts up all, not that he doth this of a free mind, if we may say a dog has a mind, but because it troubleth his stomach. But now, when his sickness is over, and so his stomach eased, his desires being not at all alienated from his vomit, he turns them about and licks up all. And so it is true which is written, the dog is turned to his own vomit again. This I say, being hot for heaven by virtue only, and of the sense and fear of the torments of hell, as their sense of hell and the fears of damnation chills and cools, so their desires for heaven and salvation cool also. So then it comes to pass that when their guilt and fear is gone, their desires for heaven and happiness die, and they return to their course again. Secondly, another reason is they have slavish fears that do overmaster them. I speak now of the fears that they have of men. For the fear of men bringeth a snare. So then, though they seem to be hot for heaven, so long as the flames of hell are about their ears, yet when that terror is a little over, they betake themselves to second thoughts, namely, that 'tis good to be wise and not to run, for they know not what, the hazard of losing all, or at least of bringing themselves into unavoidable and unnecessary troubles, and so they fall in with the world again. Thirdly, the shame that attends religion lies also as a block in their way. They are proud and haughty, and religion in their eye is low and contemptible. Therefore, when they have lost their sense of hell and wrath to come, they return again to their former course. Fourthly, guilt and to meditate terror are grievous to them. They like not to see their misery before they come into it, though perhaps the sight of it first, if they loved that sight, might make them fly whither the righteous fly and are safe. But because they do, as I hinted before, even shun the thoughts of guilt and terror, therefore, when once they are rid of their awakenings about the terrors and wrath of God, they harden their hearts gladly, and choose such ways as will harden them more and more. You are pretty near the business, for the bottom of all is for want of a change in their mind and will. And therefore, they are but like the felon that standeth before the judge. He quakes and trembles, and seems to repent most heartily. But the bottom of all is the fear of the halter. Not that he hath any detestation of the offence, as it is evident, because let but this man have his liberty, and he would be a thief and so a rogue still, whereas if his mind was changed, he would be otherwise. Now I have showed you the reasons of their going back. Do you show me the manner thereof? So I will willingly. Firstly, they draw off their thoughts, all that they may, from the remembrance of God, death and judgment to come. Secondly, then they cast off by degrees private duties, as closet prayer, curbing their lusts, watching, sorrow for sin, and the like. Thirdly, then they shun the company of lively and warm Christians. Fourthly, after that, they grow cold to public duty as hearing, reading, godly conference and the like. Fifthly, then they begin to pick holes, as we say, in the coats of some of the godly, and that devilishly, that they may have a seeming colour to throw religion, for the sake of some infirmity they have spied in them, behind their backs. Sixthly, then they begin to adhere to and associate themselves with carnal, loose and wanton men. Seventhly, then they give way to carnal and wanton discourses in secret, and glad are they if they can see such things in any that are counted honest, that they may the more boldly do it through their example. Eighthly, after this they begin to play with little sins openly. and ninthly, and then being hardened, they show themselves as they are, thus being launched again into the gulf of misery, unless a miracle of grace prevent it, they everlastingly perish in their own deceivings. Now I saw in my dream that by this time the pilgrims were got over the enchanted ground, and entering into the country of Beulah, whose air was very sweet and pleasant, the way lying directly through it, they solaced themselves there for a season. Yea, here they heard continually the singing of birds, and saw every day the flowers appear in the earth, and heard the voice of the turtle in the land. In this country the sun shineth night and day. Wherefore this was beyond the valley of the shadow of death, and also out of the reach of giant despair, neither could they from this place so much as see Doubton Castle. Here they were within sight of the city they were going to. Also here met them some of the inhabitants thereof, for in this land the shining ones commonly walked, because it was upon the borders of heaven. In this land also the contract between the bride and the bridegroom was renewed. Yea, here, as the bridegroom rejoiceth over the bride, so did their God rejoice over them. Here they had no want of corn and wine, for in this place they met with abundance of what they had sought in all their pilgrimage. Here they heard voices from out of the city, loud voices, saying, Say ye to the daughter of Zion, Behold, thy salvation cometh. Behold, his reward is with him. Here all the inhabitants of the country called them the holy people, the redeemed of the Lord, sought out, etc. Now, as they walked in this land, they had more rejoicing than in parts more remote from the kingdom to which they were bound, and drawing near to the city, they had yet a more perfect view thereof. It was builded of pearls and precious stones. Also the streets thereof were paved with gold, so that by reason of the natural glory of the city, and the reflection of the sunbeams upon it, Christian with desire fell sick. Hopeful also had a fit or two of the same disease. Wherefore here they lay by it a while, crying out because of their pangs, If you see my beloved, tell him that I am sick of love. But being a little strengthened, and better able to bear their sickness, they walked on their way, and came yet nearer and nearer, where were orchards, vineyards, and gardens, and their gates opened into the highway. Now as they came up to these places, behold, the gardener stood in the way, to whom the pilgrim said, Whose goodly vineyards and gardens are these? He answered, They are the king's, and planted here for his own delight, and also for the solace of pilgrims. So the gardener had them into the vineyards, and bid them refresh themselves with dainties. He also showed them there the king's walks and the arbours, where he delighted to be, and here they tarried and slept. Now I beheld in my dream that they talked more in their sleep at this time than ever they did in all their journey. And being in a muse thereabout, the gardener said even to me, Wherefore musest thou at the matter? It is the nature of the fruit of the grapes of these vineyards to go down so sweetly as to cause the lips of them that are asleep to speak. So I saw that when they awoke, they addressed themselves to go up to the city. But as I said, the reflection of the sun upon the city, for the city was pure gold, was so extremely glorious that they could not as yet with open face behold it, but through an instrument made for that purpose. So I saw that as they went on, there met with them two men in raiment that shone like gold. Also their faces shone as the light. In coming towards the end of the journey, so near to the celestial city, we have noticed that for the last while, Christian and Hopeful have been engaged in earnest conversation. This they did as they entered the enchanted ground, in order to keep them watchful and vigilant. Whether this conversation focused on the testimony of Hopeful or their meeting with ignorance, it is clear the reader's attention is drawn to the contrast between true and false faith. In closing their thoughts about ignorance, they discuss the very essence of the true fear of the Lord. Such fear arises from saving convictions for sin. Such will drive the soul to lay hold of Christ and such will always create true and lasting reverence for God. These are all timely lessons established for us in the Bible, the Word of God. It is here Christian remembers a former pilgrim. His name is Temporary, and he came from the town called Graceless. This man also lived next door to one called Turnback. It is clear to see here that John Bunyan has in mind not a genuine Christian who falls away from God or backslides, but one who has never experienced the grace of God in salvation in the first place. Temporary, however, presents a different type of person. Someone who looked to religion for support, a person who may attend church and show interest when troubled by the consequences of sin, but when those troubles disappear, so does the individual. Hopeful in giving his assessment as to such a man and reasons for such falling away, speaks of the proverb which reminds us the dog returns to his vomit. When Christian speaks, he outlines a frightening and sobering reminder of the manner of such a turnback character. In those 9 points, Bunyan shows that why some forsake faith and fall away for good. Even for us as Christians who are the Lord's, it is important for us to note these warnings and to learn from them. It has been a long journey, to say the least. But now the two men arrive in the country of Beulah. It is here they experience the refreshing contrast to their weary journey so far. The air here is sweet and pleasant. Bunyan is now describing the believer's longing for heaven and to be with Christ. Beulah, which means married, is a reminder of Christ's everlasting love for his church, his bride, and all along with the covenant truths of God's grace. It is also a place where a better, more perfect view of glory can be seen. The more these pilgrims look and think, the more they feel homesick, and they yearn for this final but eternal destination. As Christians enter their final stages, the Lord will place such desires and longings into our hearts.